Welcome, everybody, to the Competition Archery Media Podcast, where we explore all things pertaining to competition archery. I'm your host, PJ Riley, and our CAM podcast is brought to you by our fine platinum sponsors, Trueball Excel, Matthews, PSE, Black Eagle, Elite, B3 Archery, and Victory Archery. Here, we have a special guest in our studio today, fresh off the 2021 Gator Cup, where she won Women's Recurve. Mackenzie Brown.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going great. How's it going for you?
It's going really well. I'm very happy right now.
Happy. Tell us about Gator Cup. Let's talk through that before we get into other things.
Yeah, so Gator Cup was just number three of my events this year. Got about a bajillion more to do. but Gator Cup was really good. So I've been working a little bit more on like the mental side of my archery lately because physically shots are going great. Everything's going good. Went into Arizona Cup, and Arizona Cup was a more of a learning experience. It was something that I could go into with some of the things that I've been working on and then just kind of try some new things and then see what else needed to be worked on, because in practice you can have the most optimal practice, you can be shooting great, you can be shooting the best scores of your life, which I was, which brings you a lot of confidence. But then you go into a competition, and as much as everybody tries to say treat competition just like practice, it's a feat in and of itself to make that happen. So when I went into Arizona Cup, found a couple more things to work on, and then I took those to Guatemala, which was shortly after Arizona Cup. And Guatemala went really well, got a silver medal there. That's my second individual World Cup medal.
Nice.
So, and I'm the only female from the U.S. who has ever gotten two World Cup medals.
Ah.
And I'm the only U.S. female who's ever gotten a gold World Cup medal individually.
All right.
I hate tuning my own horn, but I just thought I'd throw
that
out there.
Hey, that's what we're here to do. I'll toot it for you.
Okay. But anyway, found some really good things out in Guatemala about some of the tactics that I had worked on through Arizona Cup, and then went into Gator Cup with that same mentality, the same focus. And qualification day was a little bit challenging. The wind on that field is really tricky. If anybody's ever been there before, it's changed over the years for sure, because the way the field was, the backside of it is woods.
Yeah.
And on that right side, it comes out at an angle with just solid woods. And it used to go all the way around over on the side.
Like the woods did.
The woods did, yeah. Sorry. So you would get a lot more swirling wind. Whereas now they cut it off and there's no woods over on this, like from your like 11 o'clock over.
Yeah.
And so you've got a lot more wind coming in from like the road and everything. So it's just, it's changed over the years. But the wind would shift like mid end. So you just really had to be on your game, watching socks, watching the indicators that you feel like are actually telling you where the wind is going.
Yeah.
And then, you know, adapt to that. So I think that qualification went really well. I found out that after the fact that I was 5 points behind on my last end going into the last end. To
5 points out of
first.
Okay.
5 points out of first.
Yeah.
And there's this girl named Gabby. She's on Instagram everywhere. Like I see her everywhere on Instagram.
Uh-huh.
And at Arizona Cup, she finished third, and she's having a really good year. So she was 5 points ahead of me in qualification. And then on my last end, I pulled out a 58.
All right.
And we actually tied on score. But I had a lot more tens. So anyway, finished in first. Was really excited about that. I lucked out and had my dad there. He recently moved to Florida for his job. And so he, once he moved down there, he was like, I'm going to try to come. So he was actually there for both of my days of competition, which I loved having him there. It's really nice to be able to have him in there, because when I was growing up, I had him at all my tournaments.
Right.
And then as I moved out to the training center and really got into my more professional career, you know, he had to take care of the priorities for the family and everything. So I'm really grateful when he's able to come to tournaments and my family's able to come to tournaments. Yeah, so I was really happy to have him there.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So finished with qualification, was really happy with that, and then went into elimination day. And eliminations went great. I was really happy with my aero average, and that's something that a lot of people, I think, overlook. They're more thinking about just winning the match.
Right.
And aero average for me is just so important, because the way our USAT ranks work, that goes into it as well.
Oh, it does.
Mm-hmm. So you've got your qualification finish, you've got your aero average, and then you've got your elimination finish. So all of those compile together to give you points.
This is for USAT. This is
for USAT ranking.
Like the World Cup things, not for Olympics. That's
separate. This is for national ranking. Right. Yep. So our national ranking does determine our World Cup teams. And it also determines some of your like sponsor benefits and things like that for your national teams. So there's a lot that goes into it. But anyway, aero average is good, because if your aero average is good or one of the best on the field, more than likely you're winning a lot of matches. So it's a good way to think about it. But anyway, was really happy with that. A lot of my matches went smoothly. I was focused on myself. I was focused on what I was doing, and really just having fun with it. I was joking with people, talking to people. And when you're in a good mood, it's easier to shoot well.
Right.
You don't have to overcome that and just be in a bad mood.
Just being in a bad mood, like I usually am on the line out there.
We'll have to work on that, PJ. We'll have to work on that. You got to be in a good mood.
If they'd go in the middle, I'd be in a great mood.
Well, if you're in a great mood, they'll go in the middle.
There's like a revolving door there that I just can't get out of.
It's just a snake chasing its tail. But yeah, was really happy with those matches. And then we had an hour in between when we finished our semifinal match and when we shot our finals.
And now, let me interrupt you there. Do you like that better versus World Cup? You're off for like, 2 days mm-hmm. or something before you come back to mm-hmm. your medals matches. What do you like?
I would rather shoot it that day.
Gotcha.
And the reason being is that you worked your way up to get to that point, and there's a reason why you got to that point on that day. Like, you're rolling, everything's going good, and it's your day. Versus going into a finals a few days later and you're like, it could be different. Conditions can be different. But it's also just the nature of the beast. Like, you have to be prepared to go out and do your best on every day. So, I think if you just have your mindset where you're like, okay, I'm just going to go in and do my shot and do the best that I can, then it's kind of negligible, I think, because it just is what it is, and you've got to do your best with what you got.
Any difference then when it's a gold medal match? So you know it's a gold medal match. Cameras are out. Commentators, Paige Pierce and Alexi Keller, are back there. Any of that enter in, or is all that just
extraneous? No, I kind of had mental horse blinders on. Like, I just, like, you can watch the video and see, I just literally walked up, shot my arrows. I didn't really even look at Casey very much. I was just like, she was there. I knew I was watching my clocks and stuff like that. But I was focused on me shooting my shot.
Right, right.
And at the end of the day, if I go up and shoot good shots, that's going to give me the best chance of winning. So if she's doing something different, she's doing her process, then at the end of the day, you're going to get the better archer for that match. So right. I think that that's something that I'm really focused on is just I'm going to do my thing. And then, you know, my competitor is going to do their thing. And
what was your last USAT gold medal?
It's been a minute. It honestly has. Yeah. I don't know if I won last year.
So how does that feel? I mean, we are in an Olympic year. Mm-hmm. You have the last trials a week.
Yeah, week and a half.
About a week. Yep. Yeah, something like that. That's got to feel, you got to feel confident.
Yeah, it feels really good. It definitely pushes into the confidence. And it also, the thing is with working on other aspects of my archery and trying new things, it's solidifying in me that that's the right way to go, right? Like if you're trying something new and you see some success with it, it almost like doubles up on your confidence because you're confident that you won. And then you're also confident that you're going down the right path with the things that you're trying.
Right.
So I'm really excited about that.
You said that you were working on your mental mm-hmm. game a bit. How do you do that?
I think it's just framing in your mind the way you want a tournament to go is what I'm kind of working on.
I want to win every tournament.
Yeah.
I don't even shoot that many, but I want to win them.
Okay. So what I would say is that building up your confidence in practice is really good. But then when you go into competition, getting yourself into the position where you're like, I'm just going to shoot my shot. I'm going to make every effort when I'm on the line to just shoot my process. And at the end of the day, it's going to be what it is. Because I think that when we go in and try to say that we have any kind of control over what everybody else does, any kind of control over the conditions or anything like that, you're focused on the wrong things. You're focused on the things that you can't control versus the things that you can. When you go into the competition and focus on the things you can control, and say like, your bow arm's not as strong or your hook is or whatever is needs work, then you can work on that. But you can't work on what other people are doing. You can't work on the situation of the tournament or anything like that. So I think it's almost a freeing feeling to sit there and say, okay, well, I did everything I was supposed to do. Now I have things that I can work on physically when I go back and practice.
What do you do? I'm hoping other people out there have this issue besides me, but there's a huge difference. I'm world champion of my backyard range.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
As everybody is. As soon as it goes, somebody says, okay, now we're keeping score for real. Man, I just fall to pieces. Yesterday we had a fun challenge mm-hmm. where we were just shooting steel targets. And there was nothing on the line there other than mm-hmm. I didn't want to be the first person to blow up an arrow. But well, I was nervous.
Yeah.
You weren't.
Yeah.
You were just, shooting my bow.
I did get a little nervous at the 60-yard shot. That one was a little bit nervous. And then the 70 one, I was like, I didn't have a 70 mark. I just drew back and I made the best educated guess I could do. And that's what it was. But I think, and I got this advice from a really good friend and from a good archer, Rio Wild. I talked to him in Guatemala and he brought up Hoosiers.
Yeah.
Where they went out and they went to the big tournament, right? And he went out and took measuring tape and measured out the basketball field or basketball court,
yeah.
The rim, the size, all of that stuff. Was it any different from their home court? Was it any different from what you shoot in your backyard? Well, yeah. Probably a little bit because, you know, 3D tournaments are going to be different distances, but you've shot those distances before. You have a sight tape. You have all of that stuff. So, again, it's back to what I was talking about as far as framing it in your mind. Is your job to go out and control every little aspect, or is it to control yourself and to make the best shots that you can?
So what I have found is that if I'm doing well, it's easy for me to do that. It's when I start having problems that the machine really comes off the tracks.
But why do you have problems?
As far as...
Like what problems are you talking about?
Oh, shots that I'm not hitting where I think I should be.
So if you make shots and they don't hit where they're supposed to, what is the problem? Is the problem because you misset your sight?
This, we don't have hours to go into all that, but if we did, there are many problems.
But what I'm saying
it's bad shots by me is usually. Okay. And I know what it is as soon as I do it.
Okay.
Darn it, I dropped my arm. Okay. I pulled, you know, whatever.
Yeah. But then does thinking about the problem help with the solution?
Nope.
So a lot of times when I'm working with good coaches, and you know, Chris Webster is one of my coaches right now. He's awesome. I've worked with him for a long time and he's really helped me a lot recently. And, a lot of times when you pose a question that makes you think about it, it gives you your own answer, your own internal answer,
right,
in your language. Right. 'Cause if I sit here and tell you, well, don't think about the problem, think about the solution. That could be something different for you than it is for me.
Right, right.
Right, but like, again, it's changing the way your brain works. When you're driving down the road and your gas light hits E, you know, you get that ding on your dash. Do you think, oh man, that my car is going to break down on the side of the road or whatever? That's not your default. Your default is go get gas, right? That's the solution to the problem.
Right.
It's not thinking about the immediate problem unless, you know, you're in the middle of nowhere. But in this context, right, like that is, you're thinking about the solution. You're not thinking about the problem.
Yeah.
So like if you're in a competition and you're thinking about, oh, this is going wrong, it's a snowball effect.
Yes.
You know, you're just sitting there and it's like all these problems. But if you think about that one problem and think about what is the solution to that, how do I think about making that better, then you're thinking about how to fix it instead of,
right,
like staying in the problem.
I like that.
Yeah.
I'm gonna have to try it. Okay. I don't know if it's gonna work, but all I can do is try, you know?
But that's the whole part of it is like, you don't know if it's going to work. Anytime you work on your form, anytime you work on anything, you don't know if it's going to work.
Right.
But like, that's archery. You have to try it and give it your best shot. And then if it doesn't work, happens, then you try a different solution.
Well, all right. I'll give that a shot.
Yeah.
But enough talking about me, because I'm a hack and you're good at archery. So let's talk about your archery.
Okay.
But I was surprised when we sat down here that you and I had never done a podcast before.
We haven't done a podcast before.
We had.
Mm-mm.
So we have not put on the record. Tell us about how you came to archery, because I know the story, but it's very interesting.
Yeah.
This was not actually your first Olympic sport, what you wanted to be.
Yeah, I say that, but so when I was younger, when I was little bitty, I went and was doing like t-ball and softball. Really loved that. Loved playing ball and just loved the atmosphere going out summer nights, you know.
In Texas,
just playing ball. I loved running. I loved being active. Got to a point where I was really good, but there was a team that was trying to get me onto their team. They were trying to recruit me from another team, and they were not very sportsmanlike, and their coaches didn't hold that in high esteem. And so whenever it was offered, my dad was like, nope, this is not the route we're going down. And I looked back when I was younger, I was like, oh, I really wanted to continue to do that. But I also think that it was a really smart, like, parenting choice and a character choice for me going forward, because I think making the right character choice at that time, like, set me up for success over my career. Because at the end of the day, having good character and being a good sportsman is so important to me. Like that's a big, big thing for me, especially when I, you know, work with other people, people international. It's respect, you know, everybody respects that you're putting in all this time, all this effort, all this work. And they also respect that because they know how hard it is.
Right.
But I look back at that a lot and think, yeah, I'm glad that that was the decision that was made. But then, you know, kind of bounced around. I did dance and I did just stuff like that. And I did dance for a while, but it wasn't a passion. And then I did swimming. I got into swimming because my best friend at the time was a swimmer, and it just seemed like a fun atmosphere. And so, and I had always been a fish. Like, my great grandmother took me to swimming lessons when I was like 4 and 5. Like, I was tiny in swimming, but just loved being in the water. So tried out swimming, really enjoyed it, got on swim teams, went to meets, did the whole thing.
What age are we talking about here?
This is like, I'd say 8 and 9.
Okay.
And so I was swimming, and I was like, oh, I want to go to the Olympics, because that's what everybody thinks whenever they become a swimmer.
Sure.
Because you get, I was getting like the swim magazines and stuff like that, and it had, you know, Michael Phelps when he was little, and all these really cool people, right? And I was like, yeah, I want to go to the Olympics. And I was never good enough to go to the Olympics with swimming. Like, I had a really decent fly, like butterfly stroke, because I have such a huge wingspan.
Yeah, right.
And big paws and stuff like that. But I wasn't going to the Olympics with swimming. But then in 5th grade at my middle school, they brought in NASP, National Archery in the Schools program, and that's right. Where we shoot the Genesis bows. So I got into that, and it was at PE, and after school you could stay for a little bit longer, and really enjoyed it, just had fun with it. And
was it one of those things where the first time you did it you're like, oh yeah, I like that?
Well, I honestly think that I wasn't listening, and I think I dry fired the first shot that I ever shot, but
it's Genesis. They're indestructible.
Yes, they are. I honestly, and to this day, I just talked about it yesterday. I think that everybody should start with a Genesis bow, no matter what you want to do.
Yeah.
I think that it is the best bow to invest in if you're trying to get your kids into archery. If you like, it is a super cost-effective bow. Anyone can shoot it. You can get a mini, you can get the regular, and then you can get the pro, so you can grow into it. I honestly think it's one of the most versatile bows out there. But it was all instinctual. No sights. I think it was like 15 yards, which seemed like a really far away in the gym.
Right.
But anyway, my parents are very involved in everything that we do. I have a little sister, and they're very involved with what she does, and they're very supportive. And so when I brought home the permission slip for going to the state tournament, my dad's like, let's go down there and talk to my PE coach. So he comes down and talks to him, and I think it's awesome, but I look back and he's saying, my dad's like, what is all this? You know, is she any good? Like, what's going on? The PE coach looks at him and goes, well, she's not very good, but she practices a lot and she likes to practice. And so, you know, that's something funny to look back on. And you know,
you still
now,
have that guy's name and number.
Yep.
Say, hey, buddy.
Yep. But he is such a supporter,
I'm
honestly,
sure he is.
Like, super proud and all of that stuff. But anyway, went over to the state tournament. My mom and dad came down and watched. And I actually won my age division.
No kidding. First time.
Yep. Had my first and only, I think, tubed Robin Hood.
All right.
And Yeah, I actually, my score won the age group ahead of me too, like the age group up.
Yeah.
But anyway, got a big trophy. He was really excited about that. And then when I came back, we started looking into stuff. We looked into, so the JOED, who certified the coaches who didn't ASP, the coaches at our PE, at our school, they went and worked with the local JOED to be certified to be able to teach at the school. And so they pointed us to that JOED, went out there, learned how to shoot. And for the longest time we were looking into a compound bow. My dad got a catalog. I think he got, I want to say it was a Hoyt catalog, or it may have even been a Lancaster catalog, but we were looking at bows and
I remember it was Lancaster.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Why not? But we were looking and I think it was, gosh, I can't even remember what bow it was, but it was back when they had the fusion colors. You remember those?
Yep.
The ones that look like lightning on them? And they had the red, the green, and the blue at that time.
Yes.
So, anyway, I was really excited. My dad was going to invest in a compound bow for me. So I was actually slated to go compound. But then he comes home and tells me one day, he's like, archery's in the Olympics. I was like, then I'm shooting recurve and we're going to the Olympics. And from then on, like, I just never.
Now, what age is that?
That's 10. So
it's 10. Okay.
Well, that age was probably closer to 11. But when I was starting was 10.
Gotcha. So,
but so I've been doing archery more. I've been doing archery longer than I've not done archery.
How old are you now?
I'm 26.
26. Okay. Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I was really excited about that. and then I remember my first riser that we got, which was a Windstar 2 back in the day.
Nice.
Had some Samick limbs on them.
Yes.
Yeah, I was super excited. And then my first real like competition bow was a white Hoyt Nexus. With okay. the biter quadriflex bars, those ones that have all of the smaller carbon
yeah.
tubes and stuff, and they had like the white plastic pieces. I thought it was the coolest thing ever. I had a Sherlock side on at the time, and it was a good looking bow. Like it was the top of the line stuff, and I look back now and I'm like,
Do you think you could shoot good scores with it now?
I'd like to try. If we still have it, I'll definitely set it up and do like a retro shoot.
Yeah.
I've always thought about that. I think it would be really cool to have like an old, do like a gold medalist
yeah.
with like some Yamaha limbs and stuff like that, and just go old school recurve setup and shoot it and see.
We were looking at
see what it would be like.
We did a podcast last year with Justin Hewish.
Uh-huh.
And so we went back and I was looking at the bows that they were shooting then. And I was like, how in the, and he was shooting the same, you know, stuff like they're shooting now, 10, mm-hmm. 10, 10, 10, 10. And just everything, you can see everything vibrating. And mm-hmm. I don't think he had V bars. I think they just had a front stabilizer. Mm-hmm. It just looked like a train wreck, but they were still shooting it and shooting good scores.
That's proof in the pudding. You know, I talk a lot about like people when they invest in equipment, is that it's kind of like golf, where people buy Pro V1s and they are not a Pro V1 hitter. It's the same thing with equipment. If you can hit well, or if you can shoot well, then it doesn't matter the equipment. The equipment right. is only like that top of, like on top of everything else that makes it just a little bit better. But, you know, whenever we're shooting, like I don't recommend the really expensive equipment for the beginners, or for
sure.
even for the intermediate archers. I'm a firm believer, like when it comes to like X10s or things like that, and Easton may not be very happy with me for saying this, but I think that until you're consistently over 300s at whatever distance you're shooting, shoot ACEs. You know, like shoot a more cost-effective arrow for you.
It hurts less if something goes wrong.
It does, but they're a really good arrow.
Sure.
And yeah. I think buying X10s just for the sake of having X10s doesn't make sense whenever you could maybe have a more forgiving arrow that's less expensive and, you know, you learn to shoot well.
Right.
You know, I'm a firm believer if you shoot well, then the equipment is just a bonus on top of that if you get better equipment. So.
Gotcha. So you're in Joad now down mm-hmm. in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And then how do you get into the USAT pool?
Mm-hmm. So I'm shooting state tournaments and things like that. And then we learn about Joad Nationals. It's up in Oklahoma City. This is probably, I want to say like a year and a half later. But we go there and my dad actually goes ahead of me and goes into a coaching course. There's a judge up there, Jane Johnson. Do you know Jane?
I don't know.
Okay. She's pretty famous in the South for being a coach and a judge and stuff like that. She's a judge, but it was cute. She used to carry around this wooden stool because she's just 4 foot nothing. Like she's super small lady. But she would carry around the stool to check arrows that were too tall for her. So she'd go over to the target, open her stool out, put it down, step on the stool, and check the arrows. She's such a cool lady. We used to do at Nationals, we'd have like the closing dinner, and she would lead us in the Auld Lang Syne song. It was
right.
Awesome. It was awesome. She's such a cool lady. But anyway, she was hosting a level 1 and 2 course up there. So my dad went up there to do that. Then he met Dee Fox, who was a JDT coach at the time. Dee introduced me to Coach Lee, or had Coach Lee come and watch me shoot. And then he somehow made it happen to where I was able to go to a JDT camp, to try out for a JDT camp.
Yeah. Junior Dream Team.
Yes, sorry. Junior Dream Team.
Yeah.
And I went to my first Junior Dream Team camp, I believe, when I was 13.
Oh, okay.
And that was in 2008. So.
Way back in 2008.
Yep. 2008. But it was really cool.
Yesterday to me.
It was really, I know, it's like yesterday to me too. I remember going up because the training center was so cool. They had like the visitor center where they had like a merch shop and stuff like that.
Yes.
And so they had like all of the Beijing gear and all of this. It was so cool. And I remember, because it was in 2008, it was shortly after they had come back from the 2008 games. So we got to hear from Brady right after he came back from Beijing.
Right. That was his first
mm-hmm.
games. Yeah.
So he came and talked to us about the Olympics and stuff like that. And it was just a cool experience. And I worked my butt off. Like we would shoot until it was dark, and it was so cool because you're around other people who also had the same amount of drive as you did, because you can go to state tournaments and see people who just are there to have fun.
Right.
They want to do well, but they're just there to have fun. And we love those archers. They're, you know, recreational shooters, and it's just something different. But then when you meet people that are kind of your ilk, that are just so into the,
want to be the best,
into the success part of things. Yeah. Went there and had a really good time. And at first, I don't think that Coach Lee had really considered me. Like, I don't think that he thought I was going to be a really good shooter, because I had jacked up form at that time. Like, I have old pictures of me, and I have, like, my elbows way up here and, you know, just looking all kinds of ways. But I wanted to learn. I wanted to get better. And I think that more than anything, having the right attitude, if you have the right attitude, I think that anything can be overcome when it comes to form, when it comes to anything else. If you've got the right attitude and want to work hard, you can make that person into a champion.
Right. Good deal. Mm-hmm. So you go through, you hit that patch of success that you had before mm-hmm. the Olympics there mm-hmm. where you were winning everything in sight. Mm-hmm. What? Tell me about that. What was that like? I mean, basically, if there was a women's recurve event, you were going to win it. Mm-hmm. That was just mm-hmm. the given.
Yeah, so that was probably, I would want to say that's 2014, 2015, 2016. That was my bigger push of winning everything. And
indoor, yeah. too. I mean, if it was indoor, yep. Mackenzie Brown was going to win it.
Yep. 2016, I think, was my first year going to the Classic, too. And that was the year that it got snowed out. Or was it 2015?
I can't remember when that was. It was one of those 2 years.
I want to say it was 2016.
Wasn't that the Olympics?
Mm-hmm. That was the Olympic year.
I could be. I can't remember.
But it was my first year going to the Classic, and it was snowed in, and it was the Snowmageddon year, and it was awesome. I thought that was fun. But, yeah, everything was going good. Really enjoyed shooting, and just if I wanted to put my mind to it, it was going to happen.
And so you go to the Olympics. You were mm-hmm. the only representative we had on the women's team to go yep. out there. How was that? What was that experience like? I mean, I've heard a bunch of your stories mm-hmm. with the basketball team and mm-hmm. all that stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, was it everything, I guess I'd say, was it what you had thought, what you had
it was more.
Expected in your mind? It was more.
It was more than what I had thought about. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know how to explain it well enough, because people explain it, and then you're like, you get this picture in your head, and then it's different when you get there, and it's like, oh, this is so much different, it's so much better,
right?
But just like, we went and watched other sports, we did all kinds of cool interviews, we got to shoot in a very historic place. Like, the place we were at is the Sambadrome, and that's where they have Carnival. That's where Carnival finishes.
Yeah.
Is right there. So we've got this crazy, like, experience of being there. And I think, too, one of the things that's interesting is that we shot the test event the year before in 2015.
Right.
So we were in that venue. We got to shoot that whole thing, shoot it just like the games. And I finished with a bronze medal there. And so I guess I kind of have had a little bit of expectations for myself there.
Gotcha.
And then coming into the games, it's like, oh, well, I've done this before. I've been on this field. I've won this field. Let's go into it. And my biggest downfall, I think, of the 2016 games was the fact that I tried to read the wind too much.
Huh.
I tried to play the wind and check and aim here, aim there, aim here, aim there. Should have just aimed in the middle. Just made my shots. And, you know, obviously hindsight's 20/20, and one of those things that you can just look back and be like, that's what I would have done, and that's what I would have done. Yeah. But
where did you finish?
I was in the top 20. I think okay. I finished 19th.
Gotcha.
So, you know, top third of the world. I'd say that's pretty all right.
I think you're right.
But yeah, big learning experience, a lot of stuff to go for 2020, now 2021.
Right. How do you feel now where this is May, mm-hmm. 3 months before the Olympics? How would you compare right now to this time in 2016?
Wow. It's so different, especially with the whole pandemic
just
and
the
everything.
World.
Yeah, yeah, like, I don't know. And here's the thing. Every games, there's always something. There's always some kind of virus. There's always some kind of sickness or things to pay attention to. Yeah, we had the Zika virus.
Right.
And so it's funny. We all were wearing the thermosels. We actually in contact with Thermacell, and they made up these like Team USA packs that they put around the thermosel, and we had them on our quivers and we're running those all the time. So, but yeah, just there's always something, you know? And so, you know, whenever this first happened, I was like, oh, it's just another thing that we have to pay attention to. And then everything started shutting down.
Yeah.
And it's just so different to how we, how the Zika virus went.
Yeah, yeah.
So I thought that coronavirus was going to be similar to like what we experienced with Zika virus in 2016.
Right.
I thought it was going to be something that's like, all right, you take your precautions, you do the things that you need to do, and then you still get to compete.
Go on, yeah.
Everything goes on. Because, like, for Zika virus, that had direct implications if you got Zika virus. And we got interviewed about it a couple of times, and my answer was, whenever you compete, you take on a certain amount of risks, travel, injury, all of these things that you assess the amount of risk and say, okay, this is what it's worth to me. So I totally expected it to be that. And then by the time I'd say March came around, we started to see some stuff. Because Zach, my now fiance, he came out for
we'll
my birthday.
We'll talk about that in a second.
Yeah. He came out for my birthday in March last year. And we were worried for a minute that he wasn't going to be able to come back, that they were going to stop flights and stuff like that.
Right.
But they didn't. He was able to go back. Slightly unfortunate, actually.
You were hoping he got trapped there.
I wouldn't have been mad if he got to stay a little longer. But yeah, that's when things started to change and it was like, okay, this is getting really serious and shutting stuff down.
Right.
And then, yeah, we went into shutdown. I ended up going back to my parents' house in Texas, finagled my way around shooting 70 meters in a neighborhood. It's a really interesting shot. So like we've got my house, and then we've got like our side yard into our backyard, and then we live kind of on a corner. And so our neighbors are actually really cool. And they said, yeah, you can shoot. I shot from the corner of the road into my backyard. So like over a fence, under a tree, like I got 70 meters there, but, I shot a lot of 50 meters and 30 meters there, which I think is really beneficial for us because it's a smaller target. So you're still being engaged. You're still doing something that's challenging. But it's also really rewarding to have really tight groups too.
When you're doing this, you still don't know that the Olympics are going to be canceled.
Yeah, we didn't know.
So you're trying to train thinking it's still going forward.
Yeah, we didn't know if it was going to be postponed or canceled or anything like that. And it was just an everyday waiting game, which I think is harder. I think it's harder when you don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah,
like
sure.
If you can plan around stuff or even have contingency plans, then that's easier. But just the not knowing is
you
just
can't really
so difficult.
Give it up because what if it goes on? But then how
you
can I put all this effort in and it may not happen?
You got to be prepared like it's happening tomorrow.
Yeah.
And so I literally just kept training. I kept doing everything that I could do. And I am actually, and some people may hate me for this, but like I'm actually really grateful that we had kind of a pause year. We still had USAD events. We had 4 instead of 5, but I'm grateful because I learned a whole lot last year that has made this year and the success I've had so early on happen.
Uh-huh.
So I think that it worked out well for me, for my archery at least.
Right.
To be able to go and do all that.
Gotcha. Well, now let's shift gears a little bit because mm-hmm. something else happened in the past year.
Mm-hmm.
That ring over there is like blinding me, the reflection off of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I got engaged.
Got engaged. Congratulations.
Thank you.
To Zach Prue, one yep. of the guys that works at the LAS Pro Shop.
Yep.
Awesome dude. 2016, I think, Lancaster Archery 18. Classic.
2018, yep.
Lancaster Archery Classic Bow Hunter Division champ. So mm-hmm. he is also an accomplished archer as well.
He's also 2016 IBO world champion.
Oh, was he? Okay. Mm-hmm. I did not know that.
Mm-hmm.
I just know he can shoot a bow. That's what I know.
He can. He likes to tell people that he can't, but he's a really good shooter.
He ended up winning our steel target challenge yesterday, mm-hmm. by the way, at 110
yards. 110
yards
at like, it was probably this big, that hole?
Yeah, maybe it's like the size of the lung area on a typical mm-hmm. Deer target size. So, yeah, he put it through there. That was pretty mm-hmm. impressive. But, so tell us about that. So that's obviously in your future.
Mm-hmm.
After the Olympics?
Yes, after the games.
That's the plan.
Mm-hmm.
What's the future look like with that, with Mackenzie and Zach?
Yeah, we're probably going to get married at the end of this year. It's going to be a really small ceremony. We haven't really nailed down a whole bunch of details, but it's going to be smaller because I've never in my head thought that I wanted the big white wedding that everybody thinks about when they're younger.
Right.
There are a couple of things that I want that are specific, and then everything else, that's it. Like, it's not as important to me.
Yeah.
But I can't justify spending a whole lot of money on a party like that.
Right.
Like, that's just not me. And that's yep. not Zach either. Like we're very much frugal personalities and just want to invest in good things. And like, if we have to spend a lot of money on the things that we want, like then we'll spend money on that. But
just promise me that there will be video of Zach doing the chicken dance at some point. I would appreciate that very much.
Well, you'll have to talk to him about the chicken dance, but we'll see. Yeah. But we'll do it right. We'll do video of it and all of that stuff, get good pictures and stuff, and do just a small ceremony. And then we'll probably have a party up here for everybody who couldn't make it.
And then what's the plan? To live here? Do you know the plan?
I don't know the specifics of the plan.
Gotcha.
But my plan is to move up here. And we'll see where everything goes from there. I have a lot of interests in my life. Like I have just random things that I like to do.
You do. I've talked to you before and there are things that you've talked about mm-hmm. sewing and I'm like,
yep.
I never would have thought that Mackenzie Brown was into that.
Yep.
Cooking.
Yep.
Carrot cake.
Yes. a funny story about that actually. So when I brought you that carrot cake, that was the day that I met Zach.
Is that right?
That was the day that I met Zach. That was the day we went on our first date. And I had talked to him at the shop earlier that day. And that's when we had decided to go grab a drink and whatnot. And then I was coming back over here to do that interview with Casey. We did that fun video.
Oh, yeah.
And I brought that cake over.
Yes.
Well, as I was bringing it over, he actually ran the shuttle back over here to grab
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah.
And he was like, hey, what's that? And I was like, it's a carrot cake. And he's like, can I have some carrot cake? And I was like, yeah, come on up and have some carrot cake or like grab some later if there's any left.
Yeah.
And he was so mad he didn't get any carrot cake. Like I didn't live that down for like months and months.
He told me, I'm going to say it was within days after that. He told me, he's like, I'm going to marry that girl.
Really?
Yep.
That's awesome.
True story.
Yeah. Yeah. We, and I didn't even know it was a date, our first date.
Is that right?
Yeah. I thought we were just going to go out and hang out.
That's the best kind.
And yeah, it was just instant connection, being comfortable with each other.
Does that How does that help you with your archery? Does it help you? I mean, he shoots compound, but I mean, he's an accomplished archer. Do you get advice from him? Do you guys bounce ideas off?
Yeah, sometimes. Like, he helps me with my compound archery. Like, my form is because of stuff that I've worked on with him, because he knows that world way better than I do. I know form, like, as far as, like, structure and bone alignment and things like that, so I can teach right. that really well. But as far as, like, using a release and aiming, like, where to anchor and all of those things, like, he helps a lot with that stuff. But I think the best thing is that he's so supportive of me and what I have to do, and, like, just supportive of, like, everyday things that I go through, and, you know, vice versa. But, like, I think that just how I was talking before, like, if you're in a good mood, it's easier to shoot well.
Right.
I think that if, like, your personal life is good, then it makes it so much easier to shoot well. And it's not like my personal life was bad at the time, but it was just, like, perfect timing for us to get together. Sure. And, all of that stuff. So I just think that it's just with how much he supports me and just talking to one another. And, he's just, like, one of my biggest fans. Him and my mom fight over who's the biggest fan for sure.
Whoever gets the MB tattooed first, I'm going to say that's the winner.
Well, seeing as Zach has tattoos and my mom has sworn off of them, I don't know.
He'll probably win.
I don't know.
Well, so this steel target challenge that I keep talking about that we did yesterday, you were shooting your compound bow, mm-hmm. hanging right there with us all yeah. the way out to 60 yards. Have you ever shot a competition with compound?
I've shot, like, little 3D tournaments.
Yeah. Okay.
I've shot with Zach doing, like, a 3D round. But I've only shot, like, one or two, maybe.
Yeah. Is that anything that interests you? Like,
very
something
much so.
To try out?
Yeah. That's something
you got
something
a lot of friends, Lexi, Keller, Savannah, all mm-hmm. them shoot compound.
Yep. It's definitely a thought in my head to try some maybe ASA stuff after this year and give that a shot. I really, this past year was my first year that I was really able to go out and bow hunt.
Right.
And so I really got into that and really loved that whole world.
Yeah.
And just, like, it's two of my favorite things together, being outside and shooting my bow. So it's just a new challenge, like, learning how to be better, learning how to set up my equipment better and all of that stuff. And I've had the chance to go and, learn more about how to set up compound bows because of Zach's position. He's our service lead out here at Lancaster. So, in the shop. So, I've helped him a little bit here and there on, like, just little stuff to start, like, changing strings and cables.
Right.
And then I learned how to swap out limbs and all of that. Like, I've learned how to tune these bows and set them up and the inner workings and stuff like that. And that's something that we were talking about, like, my interests and stuff like that. And that's something that interests me too, like, how things work, like,
gotcha.
Individual parts and moving parts and stuff like that. So,
yeah.
I think that ASA is something that I may get into after this and, do some competitions there and see what I'm capable of.
Rio Wild always talks about going out and shooting them rubber deer.
Mm-hmm.
That's just, he loves doing that.
Hey.
All right, folks, that is another episode of the Competition Archery Media Podcast. Mackenzie Brown, thanks for being here today.
Thanks for having me, PJ. I had a lot of fun.
Awesome.
You'll have to have me back again instead of just the one podcast this time.
Yeah, I thought there were at least two others. That surprised
nope.
me.
First time.
Folks, Competition Archery Media Podcast is available on all the platforms where you find your favorite podcasts. Thanks for joining us today.